This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is the unabridged millennial here, Mason Vera Payne, and thank you for tuning in. There's a lot of things going on around the world, from the threat of nuclear wars, storms, and a bunch of other stuff. The question that comes to mind is, how can you properly prepare for the unexpected? So joining me to answer that question is publisher at Survivalist.com, George Shepherd. Thanks for joining me, George.
Thanks, Mason. Glad to be here.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? How long have you been a survivalist?
Actually, what's really funny is I've been a survivalist. I found out all my life. Growing up in rural Ohio, we used to do things like pick berries and forage a little bit with my grandparents. And when I started moving into the suburbs and in some of the cities, you know, obviously we just didn't do that. The only place I know that you can do that is Seattle. I went to the city once and there's like blackberries and stuff growing on the side of the road.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty insane there. The same thing in Maine as well. But what I started to realize after a short period of time is a lot of people don't have these skills. They don't have the basic skills that I thought was very common with this type of thing. And when I started getting more involved in seeing what was going on as an adult, young adult in the political realm, and realizing that, you know, money is actually valuable and we should try to make some of it and keep it, then I started realizing that there's a lot of problems with the system. So out of my own interest in finding solutions, that's where I started stumbling on some different survival tactics and topics that were not just about bushcraft or being out in the middle of nowhere. Like some of the survival shows, they get dropped in the bush and all of a sudden they're wrestling snakes and jumping over, you know, big washouts and taking all kinds of really dangerous risks that most people shouldn't be doing at all, because all you got to do is twist your ankle, get stuck in a crevice or something, and then you're dead within a matter of 3 or 4 days. People don't realize that it's very, very dangerous to be left out on your own. So I started to go down that road and say, what are the financial survival scenarios? Because I saw our money being devalued, and I was starting to get a little concerned. What happens if those things started to come up in my mind, those questions? And I wanted to find out for myself, and I found out there was a whole group of people out there that had the same questions. And from a background, I'm a magazine publisher by trade, and I published a political magazine for a while, and like libertarian politics. And when I saw a lot of people in that realm start asking us for tips for survival, I started making my mind think a little bit differently and think back to, you know, some of the training that I had taken and some of the things I'd done some studying on. So we decided to take that entire magazine and fold it and move it into a new magazine called Survivalist. And that's where Survivalist is pretty much born at that point.
Now, you talk about being a survivalist. What's the difference between like a survivalist and a prepper? Because, you know, you look it up online, it's almost like, well, they kind of muddy and they're almost like the same thing.
That's a really great question and very insightful, by the way, Mason. A lot of people don't go that deep and think about this. This is the way that I've answered that question when it's come up in the past. I think that there's three different types of people, three different groups, and it's all based on a kind of cultural mindset. So the first, let's just talk about the survivalist. The survivalist looks at it like this. If I don't have it, I'm going to acquire it. That means if you've got it, I'm going to come and get it from you. Now, there's a certain amount of morality, in my opinion, that's involved, which is you don't take what doesn't belong to you. But there are people, and this happens every single day that we see this. I mean, there's home invasions, there's robberies, there's, you know, all kinds of things. People are living in survival mode today, every single day. If they don't have it, they go get it. That's kind of the survivalist mentality. The prepper mentality is someone that might already be doing a little bit of homesteading. Maybe they're doing a little bit of canning. They're preparing for something to happen, but they want to be ready. So they don't want to be pushed into survival mode. That's the different part of this. They're kind of padding the situation so that they can handle it when things do get bad. And then I see that there's a whole new group of people that's come on board in the last, say, 20 years or so that are they're very into, you know, being green and living off-grid. Now, off-grid can mean all of the above, if you just use that term. But what I'm talking about is people who want to literally have, like, a zero carbon footprint. They're very concerned about the environment, which is they're all great things. And actually, I think that that really plays a lot into self-reliance. And that group of people, here's the bad part about it. They're so kind-hearted in a lot of cases that they'll get taken advantage by other people if things do get taken into a bad way, or we go down a bad road. But the great thing about that is they're really totally off-grid. They're very self-reliant. They grow some of their own food. They've already got a co-op. Maybe they work with local farmers. They know how to make their own clothes. They're very independent. And that's really the realm that we're taking with survivalists, is we're not going on the hardcore side of, you know, we'll go get your stuff if you have it and we find out you have it and we don't have it. We go on the, let's just be self-reliant so that we don't need to do that type of thing. And let's try to teach this to our kids, because this is something that I believe that we've lost over not just one generation, but multiple generations. Like my grandparents used to do this stuff. They used to can and make, you know, grow their own food and things, but my parents didn't do that. I mean, it's been lost over just a few generations.
You know what? I like that you talk about that, because it's so true that those skills are lost. And, you know, being in a city, and I was raised in a city, you know, sometimes lived in a suburb, but played in the city most of my life, city of Chicago. So I don't even know what kind of stuff I could do. Are those skills, should I be learning that just in case, like what fruits to eat or where to go if, you know, something happens?
Well, in a city environment, you're probably not going to find a whole lot of roots to eat. you'd have to get out of Dodge, what we call bug out, in that kind of a scenario. So let's talk a little bit about the city and the urban environment, because it's very different than suburban and rural, which is what we usually see in some of the movies and some of the survival shows that are out there, like Naked and Afraid, for example. They just drop them in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, good luck. You got a knife and maybe a canvas bag. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of romantic in a way, like, oh, that's so cool. I wish I could do that. People don't really realize the dangers that go on in those kind of scenarios, and they're monitored. You know, so if something were to go wrong, they pull them out quick. And there's a lot of stuff that they don't air, because I know a lot of the folks that have been on those shows and some of the celebrity survival people, and there's a lot of stuff that they don't show because it shows the dangers, like, really, and they can't handle it sometimes, even the professionals. But in an urban environment, the thing that you have to be the most concerned about are going to be hordes of people that are in the same situation you are. Hunger will drive people to do the most horrendous things. Thirst and dehydration will make people lethargic, of course. So they'll start to slow down, which is great, because if you've got, you know, water, which there's the rule of threes in survival. There's 3 days you can survive without water, without any water at all. And there's a lot of water in your food that we don't even realize most of the time. You can survive 3 weeks without food, and then you can only survive about 3 minutes without air. There's actually a few other rules of threes, but that's just kind of like the way that we look at this. So if you take that breakdown and you say, okay, what happens if they shut off the city water? And we've had this happen. I mean, in Florida, this happens a lot, and other places of the country, too, where there's a tornado or a disaster, it happens. They shut the water off. You have no water source. Well, if you start drinking water that is not properly treated, and I'm not talking about being treated with fluoride and those things. I'm talking about being cleared of all of the biological contaminants. They will give you horrible dehydration, you know, give you diarrhea and vomiting, which further dehydrates you. And at that point in time, you're only, you know, a couple of days away from passing. So water is going to be the most important thing. And if it's okay with you, Mason, at some point, I'd like to give people a very solid plan on what they can do to prepare once we get through some of the reasons why. So don't let me forget that, if we can. So in that urban environment, you want to make sure that you have some food and you have at least a good water source. You need to have the media to filter that water in the proper way. Boiling it, you might not even have electricity. You might not have gas in the scenario that you're in if you get all the utilities shut down. Let me paint a really clear picture for everyone that's listening right now. You might be afraid of, well, there's terrorists out there that they could drop a dirty bomb that can cause all kinds of problems. We can talk about maybe a natural disaster like a hurricane or a tornado or even an earthquake. There's a lot of things, you know, riots, it's stuff that's happening politically in the news, so whether it's, you know, a presidential election or something else happening that just causes people to get crazy. You've got all those things. Those are normal things that happen. That's just life. It's happened for thousands and thousands of years. It's never going to stop happening. But one thing you want to keep in mind is we've never had a global economy like we do today. This is a brand new thing to the world. And all it would take is a collapse of the U.S. dollar, which if you take a look at the gold prices, you take a look at a lot of things, and a lot of economists, if you see what they're saying online and you know, people that are even offline in newsletters, the system is being propped up artificially, and a lot of people speculate on why. If we were to have a global collapse of the dollar, as being the world reserve currency, and your bank account might go from $1,000 down to, well, it wouldn't go down. It would just, your $1,000 now will cost you $1,000 for a loaf of bread. And we've seen this happen with hyperinflation. More than likely, no one's going to be able to afford utilities. People are not going to go to work because they can't get paid. And everything, the entire infrastructure will break down. That means all utilities will stop, everything. And that is the scenario that I'm the most concerned about for most people, especially living in urban environments. So you definitely need to have a bug-out location, knowing where you're going to get out of Dodge. And you're going to have to be having at least a little bit of early warning signs. So if things start to get dicey, you know, just take a trip. Take a small trip. You don't need to, you know, get the kids all freaked out about it, or parents or whoever that you're telling you're going to take a trip on. But go out a little bit away from the city. But you need to have that bug-out location set up in advance. Otherwise, you're going to be aimlessly wandering around knocking on doors and hoping somebody takes you in out of the, you know, Good Samaritan in them. And that's probably not going to happen in a time of crisis. You want to also make sure you've got a decent amount of food, which you can get freeze-dried food and some other preparedness supplies. Canned food's not going to do it. You're not going to put, you know, 10 cans of sardines or 10 cans of beans and rice or whatever in your backpack and run. It's just way too heavy. You just can't do it. So you should get a bug-out bag, and those are some things that we could talk about when you feel it's appropriate for us to do that, Mason.
Actually, that's one of the biggest things I think people don't do is just not even a bug-out bag, just to have something to, you know, prepare yourself and in your car, like even a change of clothes. What do you think should be in a urban bug-out bag?
Well, there's the bug-out bag, and then there's an EDC, or an everyday carry bag. I recommend that everyone has an EDC. It's kind of interesting in our society. A lot of women wear purses, and there's a lot of men now that wear, like, man bags or fanny packs.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to have some things that you need just right there. Some people don't, they think, okay, well, mace will be enough. Well, it's really not. That'll kind of, if you're lucky, deter an attacker. But it's not going to get you out of a pinch if you really need to. So I would recommend, number one, you need to have a good knife in your purse or on your person. And it can't be one of those plastic cheapo folders that you get for $2. This has to be a solid-state metal knife that's really, if you threw it at the ground 10 times on the concrete, it's not going to bust open. You got to get something like that because you're staking your life on it for sure. And that could be used for self-defense. It could be used for cutting rope if you get kind of, who knows, you might get kidnapped. This happens a lot, actually. Not to put the fear of all these terrible things happening into people, but just to let them know this is a reality. And it's not always just about what happens to you. It could be what happens to somebody else, but you have the ability to prevent that from going further as well. And I think that that's something we should all stand up for. Even just recently with, not to get too far off the subject, but with what's going on with the recent airline deal where they beat this guy up and drug him out of his seat. I don't understand myself consciously how the other passengers could not stand up and do something about that and allow that to continue to happen, because we're all in this together, and we need to start thinking about this as a community, that if we allow our neighbor something to happen to them, well, there's a good chance if something happens to us, our neighbor's going to stand by and do nothing as well. So you need to start developing these little community groups, which is another very important thing, especially in urban and suburban situations. That small survival community, some person can be studying, say, for example, medic skills. So say there's a gunshot wound or there's a problem like that, you can go handle those things. Someone else in that community can be doing like aquaponics or hydroponics, like growing food, and someone's doing water filtration. There's all kinds of things you can share among skills in a community much better. So getting back to your question about what can people take on a regular basis, number one is that community, knowing that you have a place to go in case things get dicey and it hits the fan. That's really, really important. That way you don't have to carry everything on yourself as well, because it gets a little bit heavy at times. So a really good knife, a good flashlight, again, not a crappy one that's plastic that you throw at the ground, it busts. You want to get something that's good. And I would recommend, there's a product that's called Life Straw. It's really small. It's I would say about maybe 8 to 10 inches long, and it's just a tube. It's like what they call water straw. It's a really, really good thing to have because it can filter up to 500 to 1,000 gallons and take out all of the biological contaminants. So you can literally like suck on sewer water or in a mud puddle.
Wow.
And at least get hydration from it. They use it in a lot of third world countries. It's based on a ceramic filter principle. So there's a ceramic filter inside. It's not like a Brita or anything that you're going to stick on your faucet. You can't use that. It's not a water filter that's going to keep you from surviving. That's why they say boil water, because it's the only thing that's going to kill the contaminants They're biological, and it doesn't kill or neutralize things such as like oil or any kind of non-biological contaminants when you do the boiling of water. So that you need all these other media, and you need to get something that's done the right way. It's not just for making the water taste better. And that's what those, like the little thing that you put in your refrigerator or you put in your faucet, those just make the water taste better. Maybe they removed a little bit of lead or something like that, but they're not really survival related. You need to get something that's a solid silver impregnated filter that will take out down to 0.02 microns of contaminants, or 0.2 microns. That's what you really want, to make sure you have that. So those are going to be important. Outside of that, just the standard things you should always have. Make sure that you have a charged up cell phone. Make sure that you have a writing utensil in case you need to leave a note, or maybe you're not able to speak and need to make notes to somebody and kind of tell them what's going on. I would always carry cash. A little bit of cash is always good. During the New Orleans crisis, people were spending like $100 for a bottle of water because they were stranded. I mean, they literally had nothing to drink, and it was, you'll spend whatever it is if you're going to be dying of thirst. I mean, that's the way it's going to be. Having a little bit of cash to get you out of Dodge, maybe you can get an extra gallon of gas that you can put in your motorcycle or in your car and just get far enough out of town to save you and your family. Another thing I recommend too, and this is kind of a little bit weird to say, but having a gold coin or a silver coin, people that are in the know will know that that actually will hold its value no matter what happens with the hyperinflation scenario. So if the dollar loses a lot of its value, the gold and silver, which is a commodity, will usually shoot up to the roof as well. And when it shoots up, all it is it's just the value of what it's attached to. So the amount of dollars it would take to buy that same gold coin go up. And if you take a look over the long period of time, say 100 years ago, a really nice custom-tailored man's suit cost about $50. In the Sears catalog, it was really expensive at times. Now, if you went to go get a custom-tailored suit, it would cost you a couple $1,000s, between $1,000 and $2,000. If you think about it, the actual price on the gold coin that was minted 100 years ago, it said 50. It was actually worth $50, is what it was set. And if you apply that to the price that gold is trading at right now, even though the coin still says 50 on it, it's trading somewhere between $1,200 and $1,800.
Oh, wow.
It fluctuates a bit. So the value of the gold has never changed. It's the amount of money it takes to buy the gold. And that's how you can see that we've lost so much value in what we own. And there's like, we're not able to pass wealth on to generations these days. We're just losing it. It's a form of taxation. It's really like a hyperinflation. It's a robbery. You just don't notice it. It's like turning the water up to boiling on a frog that's in a pot that's live. If you turn it up really slow, it'll never notice until it's fully cooked. And it won't jump out of the pool. But if you turn it up really fast, it's going to do everything it can to get out of the water. But if you just let it sit there and turn it up really slowly, it's never going to happen. That's what's happening to us right now. And at some point in time, if they crank it up, we're all going to feel uncomfortable. That's when riots happen. That's when we see the manifestations of angst, fear. These things happen in society. And that's what you need to be prepared for. On face value, it's the stuff that you can't see that's below the surface that we should all be preparing for right now and be very careful of. So did that answer your question about the everyday carry? I know it went off a little bit, but I wanted to be complete.
Oh, no, you did. I mean, that's so true. You do need knives. You need, I actually have a knife in my car, and it's not for, because I feel threatened. It's because, you never know if I have an SUV, so a lot of people ask me to, hey, come help me move stuff. And I'll always have a piece of rope or something, and you need to cut it with something. And lo and behold, a lot of people don't have scissors. So my knife comes in handy for a lot of things, a tag on my shirt that's just annoying me. The knife can fix it. It's so true. Just having those little things, piece of paper and a pen, because it's not like you can really trust somebody else is going to have that stuff anyways.
Mm-hmm.
No, but one of the things I was curious about is, what do you do when you live in the city and you need to leave? I always tell my mother, like, hey, if shit hits the fan, you're going to find me in Canada, because Chicago, we're closer to Canada than anywhere else. So, but what would be kind of like the smarter thing to do? Because I know I can't walk to Canada. So.
Right. Well, first thing I would do is I would go to Google Earth and I would pull up a map and I would plan out it. Grabbing a topographical map that you'd see from like a AAA, which they're all pretty much free. You go to AAA, you can get maps pretty much for free, which someone should always have of your local area. It's really, really important. Having a map of the United States or even of your state itself is pretty good as well. But if you go look at Google Earth, the neat thing about Google Earth is you can see water, and it doesn't really show it in the maps. And there's, like in Florida, for example, there's thousands of lakes all around these different communities, but you can never see them from the road because you don't even know that they're there. So what you can do is you can traverse the countryside if you really needed to get from Miami, for example, out to the middle of an area where it's not so bad. I don't know if I'd want to go into alligator-infested waters or anything like that. But it can get you out of Dodge pretty quick. But you can, along the way, pick up things. So you don't have to carry the water with you, for example. So you want to plan out your route. And if you've got the time, which most people don't, I recommend taking the trip. See how long it takes you to get there. Don't just make this kind of like, okay, I've got this situated. Put this in my closet for, in case it hits the fan and, then I'll use it. A lot of people are armchair preppers. They'll buy stuff, they say, great, and then hopefully they'll never use it. But they'll never use it. They just never tried these things. And you can get some really cool gear that it can be a little bit bulky, so you have to kind of store it somewhere. But to bug out and actually set up a solid plan for that, you're going to want to have at least 3 days' worth of food, 3 days' worth of water, or at least a way to acquire water, a decent collapsible water bottle, if possible. That ceramic filter, like I said before, the Life Straw would be good. You don't want to take everything but the kitchen sink because you're going to be carrying this. You might end up being on foot. You might have to abandon your car because traffic. I know that I used to live in L.A. for a while, and sometimes the traffic would be bumper to bumper for like 20, 30 miles. Imagine if everyone's trying to get out of Dodge. It might seem like, oh, no problem. I'm just going to get in the carpool lane. Well, the carpool lane doesn't move either. And, well, okay, so I'll take my bike. Well, that's okay. You can do that. That's pretty dangerous when people are driving very erratically, and they don't really care about bicyclists or motorcyclists as well at that point in time. So you need to have something that you can literally strap onto your person and run with it and not be bogged down and just, completely lose your stuff. So other things I'd definitely put in there would be what do they call it? It's like a bivy is what they call it. It's a tactical bivy, and it keeps your body heated. It's really super thin. It's like a Mylar kind of material, like a NASA space age kind of spacesuit material. And again, anything to keep your body heat, especially at night, also keep the bugs off of you. If you get in a situation where you have to sleep out in the middle of nowhere, that's another very important thing. You don't really need to have blankets, in my opinion, in your bug out bag. You can, if you want to have a fleece blanket, you can do that, but it's not really a necessity. Ways of making fire, so you can have some ferro rods. Those are the things you see people spark with. Those are always really good. Waterproofing matches are pretty good. I recommend Bic lighters. Just get you like 3 lighters because you can never go wrong with a lighter. One gets wet, try the other one. Put them in a plastic bag that's sealed up or like a pill bottle. Pill bottles are actually really awesome. Most people don't realize that. They just throw their pill bottles in the trash or in the recycle bin. Most of the times they're waterproof. They're airtight. You can put matches in pill bottles. You can put your documents in pill bottles. You can put a lot of stuff. Medicines, if you're any kind of like psychotropic drug you might be on or any kind of medication for things, with the exception of like allergies, which is not probably that bad for most people, you're going to want to take that stuff with you. A second pair of glasses, if you wear glasses, because your first pair might get busted, you might not have it. So have your second pair in your bug out bag. Also, a pair of sunglasses and sunscreen, because you don't know how long you're going to be in the sun as well. A hat along with that. And also, I would recommend some quick-drying clothes. So a simple pair of pants, like you mentioned having something in your car for, an extra pair of clothes. Quick-drying pants, quick-drying shirt. You can get these at most of the, Gander Mountain stores or outdoor worlds. They're really useful, especially in, hunting scenarios. They usually take that type of thing with them. But those are some of the things I would definitely have for sure in my bug out bag, with the exception of, some people don't believe in guns. To me, guns don't kill people. People kill people. So the gun I use as personal protection, as well as maybe if I needed to find food and I saw something that looked really tasty and I was starving, then I might need to, use that, to get that, to acquire that. It's also, you don't always have to use a gun, in a bad way either. So I've always told a lot of people that in a crisis scenario, there's going to be the things are going to be commodities are going to be, of course, gold, silver, and supplies that people are not going to be able to make for themselves. Most people don't know how to make ammunition. that's going to be just like money in a lot of cases, because especially ammunition that you have to make through mechanical means. Those are going to be what we call rimfire ammunition, stuff that's like for a .22 rifle or things like that. You have to use mechanical. You can't just do a reloading machine to get that together. And you don't have to have a big gun. You don't have to have a dirty, hairy kind of 24-inch long barrel, you know, handgun that just makes everyone go, wow. You have something that's just for personal protection, just something small, and something that's inexpensive. So if you have to leave it, it's not a big deal. It's not like you're taking a family heirloom with you or anything like that. So those are some of the things I would definitely recommend outside of a medikit, a small set of bandages, sutures. And you got to keep your sutures up to date because they will go out of date. People don't think about that. They buy them and they leave them in there for 10 years and they're no good anymore. And you can't do the stuff that you see on Rambo shows where you just put gunpowder on an open wound and you can close up the wound. You might be able to do that, but no one's going to want to do that, and it's very unhygienic, and you could end up dying from sepsis or some other kind of bad situation. So, you know, the stuff that people watch on TV is not really going to be as useful in a real-life scenario that they're going to use.
For the people listening, where can they find you at?
You can go to my website, survivalist.com. We have a lot of really great training. We have another site, too, called studysurvival.com. That has a free training program that we have. It's like just so much information on how to start getting prepared. We, inside of survivalist.com, we created a multi-module, like 30 or 40 different modules of everything you could ever want to know about preparedness. And we take people through that process with guides and videos and everything else. We wanted to make that for folks that are very, very serious about getting this together and getting it together quick. People who want to just test out the waters and see what it is that they don't know that they really should. I'd recommend you head over to Study Survival. It's a completely free site. We do a lot of posting on social media with it, and I think it'd be very useful for people.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.